time for Licking on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Licking on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. Now here's your host of Licking on Lending, David Licking.
Let's begin.
Welcome. Happy New Year, everybody. Monday, January 7th. Excited to be back on live with all the regulars and looking forward to what I think is going to be a very interesting year. You know, I was just humorous. I was talking to someone who's in my networks earlier this morning, and they say, how long do you continue to say Happy New Year? And so he laughed. He says, that was the subject of our party we had over at our house this weekend. And he says, we decided that, you know, it's good to say Happy New Year through the first week. And then after that, it is what it is. Move on. I thought that was hilarious. So anyway, we're going to say it this time on the podcast. That's it. We're closing the door on getting ready to launch in because this year is New Year is off to a really interesting start. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals. And we're very excited to have and grateful to have you as our listener. Our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. There's some interesting articles that got published just at the end of December, and it's in Mortgage Media. It's a new website. S.A. Abram and Eric Souza launched that. That's up out of the Seattle area. One article that I want to call your attention to, industry, and we'll make sure Paul gets these, Paul, our program director, gets these in the show notes today. But the article that had to do with what to expect with Mark Calabria coming in as the new FHFA director. Go check that out. It was such an interesting article that I caught up with David Stevens and Jim, and we recorded a podcast on it this last Friday. Paul's in the process of editing it, and we're going to do that as a special podcast this week. So make sure you go back and listen to not only this podcast and all the others, but definitely listen to their comments, read the article, and then listen to the interview. It was fascinating. He's been very adamant about the role of government in FHFA. Also, there's some other interviews up there. David Stevens turned the tide and interviewed me on my perspective and then published one of the articles I wrote on 2019, What You Can Expect. So lots of information. Go check out Mortgage Media. Let's get over and our Hot Topic segment today. I've got Barry Habib as our special guest. I recorded his comments of what he sees coming up later in the podcast. His interview of what he sees for 2019. It's very interesting. You will not want to miss this. I'm surprised at how, I shouldn't be surprised because Barry's very accurate, but I've been going back and looking at all of his forecasts, and he has been amazingly accurate. So I'm really honored that Barry and I have been friends for years, and I'm very honored to have Barry as our guest. So stay tuned all the way to the Hot Topic segment, and we'll get into that. Sponsors! Oh my gosh, so grateful for our sponsors. Grateful to have the Mortgage Bankers Association of America as our sponsor. About ready to hear from Rob. Almost jumped over there right away. Also, we have Black Knight as an ongoing sponsor. Grateful for them. Check out their website. They're a leading provider of integrated software and data analytics solutions. Also, Open Mortgage, buying reverse mortgages from lenders as well as being the home of some of the top LOs in the country. Also, Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborator, both of these are co-ops, creating competitive advantages for both of these lenders. I'm getting a lot of phone calls about, should we join both of these? The answer is yes, unequivocally yes. Join one, join both, but get involved. The MBA's conferences are outstanding. They're great. We want to have those. We need to attend those. I'll be at the IMB conference. But the ones that really get you up close and personal with some of the industry leaders are these two co-ops. Either one or both of them, join up with them. And then, of course, Velma, an efficient mortgage marketing and email platform, and KnowledgeCoup, providing fun and easy training for mortgage lenders. And finally, our regulars, Alice, Andy, Alan, Joe, for their contribution. Let's run over to Rob Van Raphorst and get the MBA Minute.
Hi, I'm Rob Van Raphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. The IRS remains closed during the partial government shutdown, but on Monday, January 7th, 2019, thanks to direct advocacy to the Treasury Department from MBA and close coalition partners, the agency will begin processing requests for tax transcript information made through the Income Verification Express Service program. Because it will take time to ramp this service up to normal operating status, it may initially take a few days to process requests that have been backlogged since the funding lapse began on December 22, 2018. Looking at the mortgage market, mortgage applications decreased 9.8% from 2 weeks earlier. So what does this mean? Well, both rates and applications are down. And coming out of the holiday season, we will have to wait and see what impact the markets and the partial government shutdown are truly having on the housing market. That's it for this week. Thanks for joining us.
Good job, Rob. Appreciate the commentary that he sends in for us to share with all of you on the podcast. Another one of the value contributors to our podcast. Hey, I just want to talk about the digital business card for just a minute. Again, if you're not checking it out, go out there and get the digital business card. More and more people are commenting me and said, Dave, I was a little bit dubious about your claims that this really allows me to see who is sharing my card. But folks, you will know who's sending out your card. So you hand it to someone, and most of us are doing business with someone else, and you'll know who they shared it with. It allows you to follow up, and it really allows you to get business, and it allows you also to share more information than just a business card. Yes, it can be just that, but it is so much more. Check it out at our website, Licking on Lending. Love that digital business card. Let's hear from Les Parker with the TM Spotlight and this week's macro view of the markets. Les?
TM Spotlight Soundbite is brought to you by SloanLogic. Bonds want to inverse you. Yes, they do. Everywhere you go.
Where you go.
Bonds want to inverse you. Everywhere you go. Stocks go down. Bonds go up. Oil stays down. Bonds stay up. Government shuts down. Bonds don't care. China falls. Bonds rise. Apple falls. CEO blames China. Apple falls. Cook blames his lack of foresight. Apple falls. Tim blames Trump. When others lose their intellectual property, it's a bad trade war. When you lose your intellectual property, then it's a good trade war. Inflation falls. Bond yields follow everywhere it goes. These views are my own. Go to tmspotlight.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
Ah, oh, yeah. Gotta be with you.
Hey, get the music on. I got my feet dancing tapping to that one. That's hilarious. Good job, Les. I love that. You know what? Go back and listen to those. I get more and more people saying, I go back and listen to that over and over and over. There's a lot of information in that little soundbite with his music parodies. So check it out. Appreciate Les Parker and all that goes into it. Joe Farr, good to have you back live. You did a good job of providing some commentary over the holidays, so thank you for that. Appreciate your faithfulness on that.
Oh, they made it sound usable.
Yeah, it does. Paul does a great job in the editing. I'm grateful for that guy. All right, so what you got for the forecast this week?
Well, a lot of what Les just talked about, you know, it's been a fairly volatile time. You know, I started out my notes today as talking about it being a quiet day, but as we've moved on, we've seen another nice little rally in the stock market. Fortunately, we hadn't seen a drop in MBS prices today. You know, as Les was talking about, we did see a lot of that last week, and I'll get into that in just a minute, but nice to see the Dow's up 200 and something points, and MBS prices are flat. Now, they are on the lowest point of the day, and at points in the morning, we had prices 4 or 5 30-seconds above where they are right now. So the ISM services for December came out this morning, and it was a little below expectation. Not a big driver of prices today. Factory orders were supposed to come out, but they fell victim to the government shutdown. They'll be released, I guess, sometime in the future. The nice thing that kind of sparked the market for the stock market anyway was some comments from a Chinese finance minister who made comments that were perceived as somewhat favorable for movement to a resolution of the trade war. So we'll see how all that worked out. Dave, last week was really what Les described. We had, you know, although, you know, Monday was the last trading day of the year, it was really a pretty quiet last day. And markets were closed Tuesday. Wednesday was a quiet day as well. But then on Thursday, things really got active. We had a very weak, well, not very weak, I'll say it, a weak December ISM manufacturing report. There were parts of that report that were good and parts of that were not so good, but the headline number was a miss to the downside, and that sparked a bit of a stock sell-off, and it was nice to see that the benefit of that was mortgage rates. MBS prices were became favored, and as prices rose, yields fell, and so it was good for mortgage rates. But then the next day, with the very strong
always the next day.
Yeah.
Always the next day.
Reversal. Complete reversal.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and these weren't small movements. It was like the stock market
fell
660 points, and it rose 700 points on Friday. MBS prices, weren't extremely big, but enough to make give you a headache, especially if you're managing a portfolio or a pipeline of mortgages. So on Friday, the strong jobs report came out. Just as an example, 312,000 net new jobs in December, when 180 were expected, and prior months were revised higher as well. And wage inflation was a little higher than the prior month. So a very good jobs report. That wasn't the only thing, though, on Friday, because Fed Chairman Powell gave a speech during the day. And in that speech, he made a couple comments that the stock market really liked. And it had to do with the fact that he said the Fed will be patient as it relates to interest rates in 2019. That was good to hear. And he also said that monetary policy is not on a preset course, even the balance sheet reduction. And in the past, you'll remember the Fed has said that's on autopilot, and we're gonna administer the reduction in the holdings of treasuries and mortgage-backed securities, basically as was set out. And I think it started in 2017, maybe even before that the reduction in their holdings would follow that preset course. Well, this time he said, hey, even the balance sheet's not necessarily on a preset course. So the investors really liked the fact that the Fed was showing a little bit of easier monetary policy, both as it related to future rate increases and the speed with which they might reduce their balance sheet holding. So during the week, mortgage rates improved 3 or 4 basis points. Now, looking at this week, David, it's a pretty light week for economic data. We got JOLTS that comes out tomorrow. CPI for December will be released on Friday. The bigger of the events may be that the minutes of the December 19th are going to be released on Wednesday. There are Fed speakers pretty much every day, most days this week, and Chairman Powell speaks on Thursday at 12:45 Eastern time. And like he did on Friday, he might move the market with whatever he says there. So important to pay attention. All the ongoing things continue to be issues as it relates to the politics of the shutdown, as it relates to the trade war. Brexit kind of hadn't been in the news of late, but it's still out there, and things are going to continue to proceed toward a hot point with Brexit. So lots of things to pay attention to, Dave.
Well, that's for sure. It was interesting about some of the fireworks going back between Powell, or I guess Trump towards Powell, and a lot of people were wondering, was Trump's comments influential on Powell? And we want to maintain independence between the two, but it's really interesting that Powell has seemingly come to it on his own that maybe we need to be a little bit careful. But boy, that jobs number, that was so encouraging for our economy. It worried me a lot about. As everyone knows, good economic news, which we all want, is bad for mortgage rates typically. And yet we're seeing mortgage rates still at some pretty amazing lows. So it'll be good.
Going back to Trump and Powell, Powell has said, if he asked me to resign, I'm not going to.
That was really interesting. Yeah.
And it's unfortunate that comments are being made that would cause Powell to have to double think, should I do this or not? Because I don't want it to appear that I'm.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah.
I don't think he did, and I don't think he will. And so whatever he does is going to be because he and his committee think it's the right thing to do.
And that's the way it should be. Trump, stay out. I think you're doing a good job in some areas, but stay out of the Fed. We don't need that messing with that. That's my advice to Trump and company. Hey, I want to give a shout out to Paul. He's doing a great job. He's running the buttons. He's running the show. He's running the whole switchboard today. So, Paul, what you're doing is really helpful, how you're highlighting the talking points. It's really helping. So kudos to you, man. Let's get over. Before we go to Alice, I can't wait for Alice's segment today with a legislative update. Let's get over to Scott Gordon and hear what he has to say about the science of sales. Scott?
How many times have you been asked, what do you do? Too many to count. Most people answer with their job title. I'm a loan originator. Boring. Introducing yourself is an opportunity to communicate with story. Here are three steps to creating your story. 1. Invent a main character for the listener to play a part in the story. 2. Create an easy-to-follow series of events that pose a problem for the main character. And 3. Finish your story with a one-step description of what you do to solve the problem. When someone asks, "What do?" you could reply, "Imagine that you're a traveler in a foreign land, and what lies between you and your destination is a wilderness of quicksand, thorns, and overgrown trails. People can't brave the wilderness alone. To make it to the other side, you need a guide, and I am that guide. My team has the best track record of getting travelers through the wilderness without getting stuck in quicksand or lost." 3 steps to a simple story to answer one of the most common questions asked. This sounds too good to be true. It's not. It's just the science of sales.
Good job, Scott. I love those segments and some of the things he gets us thinking about. You know, we all think we do a great job of communicating, but man, I love those thoughtful insights into the science of sales. Good job, Scott Gordon. Check out their website at openmortgage.com, as well as you can click on the link on our website and get all the information about Scott and all the previous segments. Good stuff. People are going back and listening to those just because there's some great information in those. Alice, good to have you with us today. Hope your holidays are great. We thank you for sending in some pre-recorded comments. What have you for our listeners today?
Well, Dave, probably our biggest news for 2019 is going to be to watch what happens with VA so far. So VA did, as we knew, you know, back in November, they said they put an advance notice of proposed rulemaking back in November. And sure enough, less than a couple weeks after that, we actually now have this interim final rule where VA is really trying to clamp down on the churning that's been going on in the industry. So the preamble is pretty lengthy as to all the details that are going to end up in this rule. We had a chance to go through it here as a team. So essentially what you want to be prepared for is VA's using the term type 1 and type 2 cash out, meaning a type 1, my new unpaid principal balance is less than or equal to what my borrower's loan amount is right now, or the type 2 being my borrower's going to be increasing that loan amount. Ultimately, the two products are going to have a long list of requirements, and VA is going to be instituting a new form. So we know today the borrower signs a net tangible benefit form that lenders create. It's going to be a similar form, but much more robust. It's going to have to be delivered within 3 business days of the application and, again, at closing. And it's going to have a lot of information on it for consumers, and it is a pass-fail. So today, when we give the borrower the recoupment disclosure, for example, you know, it's here's your information, and the borrower closes anyway, even if it's not a net tangible benefit for them. Well, now you've got 8 criteria, the big 8, where you have to meet one of those in order to be able to say this loan makes sense for the borrower, and that includes loans where they're increasing the unpaid principal balance. So it's going to be, and there aren't a lot of questions in this. So it's not like VA is pushing this out saying, hey, we'd love your feedback, and we're going to make all kinds of changes that you all suggest. This is, they have dissected the rules. They've got the counter arguments already in here for people who have been skating around different requirements and placements of punctuations and the word and, right? It's amazing. Yep. When you read this, you can see where certain lenders, they actually kind of call out 6 big lenders who do most of the cash out refis, not by name, but by number, and then it's easy to figure out from there. But they clearly are trying to close the loopholes that they see are out there today and definitely causing problems even in the secondary market. So this is going to be a change that comes up quick, I think, from a technology perspective, because you've got to get this form put in place, you've got to change your procedures, you've got to make sure that your systems are all up and running. So I would take a look at it now. It's a 60-day comment period, but my guess is we'll be looking at getting this put in place in the first part of the year here. So that's one big piece of news, not legislative, but definitely what's going on at VA. And then the other thing, just IRS transcripts are back up and running. I think we might have talked a little bit about that. So they'll have a couple of days that they'll have to play catch up. We also saw VA say they don't need a 1004 market conditions reports anymore with appraisals. So now we're just waiting for FHA, and then we won't need any of them anymore. So we've got Fannie, Freddie, and VA on board with no 1004 MC. So check that out. And then last but not least, we've been hearing, you know, in the market out there about H-1 visas, that some lenders out there might be taking them on FHAs. And, you know, pretty clear in FHA's guide. And as a matter of fact, they said at the MBA conference, we've been saying this, you know, back for many, many years, that they want an EAD card, and an H-1 visa is not an employment authorization card. Now, some borrowers have both, and then you can get your copy of the card for your loan. But for a borrower who only has an H-1 visa, there's some challenges out there lenders should go look at. FHA has made it very clear that they want the card, and they want this document because it has to be issued by the, you know, U.S. Citizen and Immigration Services, whereas an H-1 visa actually runs through the Department of Labor. So just a heads up to lenders out there, be real careful on your FHAs. So, and that's my report for today, Dave.
Good job. Good job. I'm getting some questions in, Alice, for you. So the first one is how do you stay on top of all of this? What resources do you do? That's the first question. So what are some of the resources you tune in at or look at?
You know, we do get the announcements on the Federal Register. We are constantly listening to our salespeople, too, right? They say, hey, this is what I'm hearing on the market. We just diligently, this radio show helps force me to stay updated. So every Monday and even during the week, we go to Fannie and Freddie's website. So we get news announcements. Of course, we watch MBA and the various other news publications, right? But you literally just have to make it a habit to go check. Has Fannie or Freddie issued an announcement? And then we're responsible over here for publishing that with our teams.
One of the questions, one question in the comments coming up, you'll love the comment, but the question is, do you publish a blog where people can go read? They love your thoughts. They love what you have to say. Do you publish anything for outside your company?
I don't. It's a fun idea, but right now it's enough just to keep up with what we need here. So.
Oh, yeah, I know. I can totally get that, which is I think this other comment was written by the same person, which cracks me up. And the comment was this. He says, as he knows, must know Bill with the way he writes this, he says, tell Cosgrove he better take good care of you because I'm going to come and try to steal you. I love what you do there. You do a great job. So, Cosgrove, I'm not trying to get your people stolen from you, but, Alice, you do a great job. You're highly recognized. Alice, again, is a Master CMB, Vice President of Education, Training, and Union Home Mortgage, and she's very happy there. I'm sure the comment is appreciated, though. So. Thanks for being with us. And talking about good training, let's run over and get a word from our sponsor, KnowledgeCoop. Do a great job on training.
At the KnowledgeCoop, we work hard to create training that engages and encourages our audience. Once people are engaged in training, they are more likely to stay focused and retain the information that they need to know. So here's your training tip for the week. Next time you have an important policy or bit of knowledge you need to train, do it in short clips and make sure you sprinkle it in with a little bit of humor. Video training is highly impactful, but only when done in the way we've been conditioned through TV. Videos should be no more than 5 minutes, should get to the point, and humor should be sprinkled through to emphasize the important points. Memories are more powerful when attached to an emotion. If you need help with your company's training, please reach out to us at KnowledgeCoop.com, and we'd be happy to assist. And that's your training minute from the Knowledge Cube, which strives for easy and fun training for the mortgage industry powered by a smart digital platform.
Thanks, Jason. Good job. Check out KnowledGeCoop, KnowledgeCoop.com. Check him out. By the way, Nathan, I'm friends with him on Facebook. That guy is an accomplished woodworker. You should see what he makes on woodwork. So go connect on Facebook with Nathan. Tell him you listen to him on our podcast. That'd be appreciated. And it's Nottingham. That's how you spell it, Nottingham. So anyway, he is really good at that. Good craftsman. Al Pollock is here with us. Glad to have him back with the weekly tech update. Alan?
What's shaking? So, you know, you said earlier, you know, you had a sort of a poll. So I quickly Googled it and I couldn't find anything in the United States, but I found something in the UK and they basically did a survey. They polled thousands of people. 26% of those people said that they feel that it's only okay to say Happy New Year on the first day, New Year's Day. And then the rest of the group, for the majority of them, said only 1 week. So I think you're
spot on. The 1 week, so we're done. Yeah. So we're putting that Happy New Year behind us. Good deal. That's good. Yeah. Yes. See, that's interesting. You would be the one of all of us that go out and poll it and do that. It would be either you or Andy for sure. So anyway, good. Thanks for doing that. Yeah. So what do you see going on? What's your forecast for technology is 2019? I've been meaning to ask you that, but I pick up the phone and just call you. But, I mean, if you wouldn't mind just dropping what you're focusing on and just answer that question, Alan, because I really, you do have a unique perspective with all that you do in the tech space.
Yeah, that's actually what I was focusing on today. And,
oh, good.
You know, it's kind of interesting. I'm going to start with a piece of news that starts off that the answer to that question, and then everything I talk about after will answer that. So the most interesting part of the news that I saw today is that CoreLogic is dropping their LOS platform, Dorado, to focus just on appraisal management. If you remember back in 2011, CoreLogic acquired them. They acquired them for something around 30-something million. It generates around $40 million right now. But the reality is what they're focusing on is really what the rest of us are going to be focusing on. What they said is it's now going to accelerate their plans to transform their appraisal management company operations. They've done a laundry list of acquisitions in that area. And really what they're saying is that it's going to help transform the use of data-driven analytics, automation of workflows, and enhance utilization of their dedicated staff and appraisers. So that's a fancy way of saying they're going to reallocate all that money to really invest into the appraisal side of the business, which is what they do really, really, really good things with.
Really, really
and we're going to see a lot more of this going on. This is going to be the year where we decide what are we going to focus on from all the investments that we've made. There's a great article in National Mortgage News that I thought was pretty interesting, and it really sets off how are we going to embrace technology this year. It's called Opinion: Home Buyers Will Favor Mortgage Lenders That Embrace Technology. And it had a couple points out of the article. You know, 3,300 fintech companies have flooded the mortgage space since 2010. More than 70% of lenders are currently integrating and investigating next-gen technology services. And 65% of real estate professionals, get ready, because we talked about this in December, 65% of real estate professionals believe they will need support for remote online notarization, communication portals, and secure collaboration spaces before the end of 2019. Now, there's tons and tons of great information on the National Association of Realtors report that just came out. But ultimately, what they're saying is 95% of all home buyers used a website in their search for a home. And all generations of buyers continue to consult a real estate agent or broker to help buy and sell their home. So what does that tell us? It tells us that there's still a very heavy set of influence coming from the real estate agent who is handholding this new millennial or this new buyer into that home, and that the mortgage transaction falls up right inside of that. So I really think that when everybody's competing for price, it's going to be experience, customer service are the things that are going to help sell customers. Yeah. I don't personally know if a lot of customers now still go out and, you know, the lending tree kind of way, right, where, you know, we'll compete for your business. I don't know if that's still a thing today. But what I can tell
I think it is. It is with some.
It is. Okay, good.
It is. Yeah.
Well, I think as lenders, there's a couple things we have to do. I think most importantly, we have to revisit. If you didn't do this at the end of the year, we have to revisit our overall customer acquisition and technology strategy. The customer,
right.
Are they still the focus?
That's so good.
Right? Online collaboration. What are we? We're focused on accuracy, removing errors, lowering costs. If we focus on the customer and we focus on just those items, we're going to see adoption of all this technology we've been spending money on. There's going to continue to be innovation. We're going to see unique ways that are going to help us interact with customers. And then I think what really important, David, we have to figure out how do we align what we've already invested in. And we talked about this a few times. We need not only to align with the industry, but really we need to align with our strategy. What are those small steps that we can take this year? Is it the acumen of our technology staff? Is it our technology solutions being integrated? Is it finally onboarding them and making those small milestone steps forward? That's where technology is going to be this year. It's going to be the consolidation of all of these solutions that we have as lenders and making the story come to life. In addition to that, you know, I do believe that there's going to be a lot of great artificial intelligence. And we talked about that last month.
Yeah.
Great podcast about machine learning. So we're going to hear more about that and digital efficiencies. But ultimately, it's how do we do more with what we have? And I'll leave you with one tip. It is extremely important that we survey our customers. We understand their sentiment.
Oh, yeah.
And we understand their experience and how do they feel with our technology. That's going to drive what it is that we really need to do.
It's called a 360 analysis. We're doing one of those right now for a client up in Dallas, and it's amazing the feedback. It's sometimes encouraging and oftentimes not so encouraging. That's really,
well,
really
you
good
know,
point. You know,
I was just going to say the old saying, you build it and they will come. In technology, it's not. It doesn't work. It's
that's
you,
not.
You build it and you wait.
Yeah.
And so, it's the same thing for us as lenders.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's so true. I was talking to George Light, dear friend and a client for seems like decades. I mean, he's like my brother from another mother. I love that guy. And he's making consistent incomes. He's using a couple of the leading products, technology products, but he's cut out a lot of it or some of it. And he just has the core ones. And he says, but Dave, it comes down to just old-fashioned hustle, getting in front of the realtor. He says that model works. I won't tell you what his basis point profit is, but it would make most people listening to this podcast very enviable. He does a good job. He says, I'm not changing my model. I've been doing it like this for 20, 30 years. I'm going to continue doing it this way. I'm going to make money. Technology is important, but it gets back to just the same old thing. Get out there and compete. Alan, good job.
That's right.
I appreciate it. I appreciate you so much, man. Good to have you back. Happy
Likewise.
New Year. And we'll look
Happy
forward
New
to
Year.
It. Andy Schell, the Profit Doctor, is going to be with us in just a minute. In fact, we're not going to wait just a minute. We're going to go right to him right now. Andy, thanks for being here, friend.
Hello, Dave Luckin. It's my pleasure to be on Looking on Lending.
It's a
you know,
honor
I do
to
agree with
you,
Alan and you that the Field of Dreams never works. People do it regularly, and it's almost always ineffective. And what's interesting, too, is that even doing surveys, as simple as those sound, there's a tremendous amount of academic foundation to drive reliability and statistical validity related to surveys. It's not as simple as ask a couple questions.
Could you say that one more time? That rolled off like you already got your PhD. That was a good statement. So
surveying is it's a quantitative tool that brings reliability and statistical validity to the conclusions if those aspects are included in the survey process. So it's not as simple as going to SurveyMonkey, ask a couple of questions to a couple people, and think you got an answer. So my only caution to surveys is, you know, you don't want to build a model off the only few that responded that isn't representative of true perspective. So you got to be careful with surveys to not draw bad conclusions or in unsupported conclusions.
Yeah, that's good.
Blah,
good
blah,
point.
Blah.
Blah,
you know,
blah, blah, blah. But it's really true. Really good point. So what you got going? What you looking at this year? What's your thoughts?
Well, the you just made a point about a guy that makes huge margins and
good
and
margins. It's huge. It's huge by today's standards, way above the industry average. But I mean, they're just respectable compared to where they were. It's got solid stuff.
Well, I wanted to this isn't really what I wanted to talk about. We can bookmark this because it'd be fun to have the team contribute. But one of the things over the Christmas break I was reading about was ethics broadly and ethics in lending specifically. And one of the things that we always assume is that, you know, if you go to Nordstrom's and you find a handbag for $300, and you go, wow, that's great. And the store clerk happens to know that exact same bag is at Walmart for $75. What do you do? And so as a lender, if we're in an environment where we have high costs and high fallout, so we have to have maximum margin in order to even make any money, and the owner wants to do distributions regularly to pay for much stuff, where's the line of how much is enough? So that's an interesting debate that I see surfacing in a lot of different places in the broker world, the mini core world, the retail originator world, because actually as things have shrunk, people are looking, well, what do I do? How much is enough? Do I need that office building? Do I need all these receptionists? And do I need this whole floor of technology people? Is it possible to outsource that? And I think the answer in most cases is yes. But anyway, it's kind of a combination of both operational efficiency through the reliance on third-party support, which is, I think, a very important thing to consider. Then there's also the ethics of lending of, if we can make more, is that always the right thing to do? So anyway, it's called corporate social responsibility as well, and how we owe to our customers besides an experience.
Well, you know what? We should make that. We've had several requests to get the regulars back on just on a regular discussion. So we may bookmark that for further discussion at another time.
Yeah, so it's January the 7th, so you know what that means. It's the end of the year processing. So everybody in accounting is slammed busy. there's so much that has to be done with the year-end processing, the quarter-end processing, the payroll reporting processing, the releasing of the W-2s, the validation of all of the compensation payments that have occurred, the building and preparation for the HMDA data release. There's a long list of stuff.
1098.
Accounting.
Yep.
Yeah, 1098s, 1099s, all that stuff that has to be addressed. And so now's a good time to don't hassle accounting. Don't ask them for a bunch of stuff. Don't complain.
All the accounting people listening to this are cheering you on right now, that's for sure. Yeah, sir. Very
yeah.
good point.
So don't complain that payables haven't been done. So just be patient. Give them some space because they're head down working 12, 14-hour days to get the regular job done, because still has to get done. We've got to fund loans, got to make sure the warehouse line debt covenants are in place. But then also they're dealing with the audit. The auditors are in, asking for a bunch of stuff all at once. And so now, you know, just give them some space. And what's going to be really interesting
space,
as we get through this year end and the audit and our warehouse line lender compliance certificates, again, we got to deal with how much is enough. So here's this tension, this cognitive dissonance that we all face is how much is enough, because we got to have more capital. So how can we have more capital year end? So we now go back into the debate on the interest rate lock commitment, unrealized gain that creates the derivative asset, and the extent to which we apply transformational cost or not. So it's going to be an interesting time for our CPA friends and our CFO friends and all the folks in accounting doing all the things that have to be done.
Leave accounting alone. This is a short message. That should be titled. The title of Andy's segment is Leave Accounting Alone. They got their hands full. Good job.
Be mindful that they are very, very busy this time of year.
Bring them chocolate chip cookies or fruit
plates
or whatever.
Donuts always work.
But donuts, sometimes donuts work, except for those that are trying to now lose weight. So anyway, that's so good, though. Good stuff, Andy Schell. Love that.
My pleasure, Dave. Always a pleasure.
Good to have you, Ben. You and Alice and Joe have been here since the beginning of this podcast, and it just floors me, the reach that it has, and I'm so grateful for your content and contribution, as well as Alice and Alan and Alice's. So Joe's, Alice, Alan, anyway, the whole group. Anyway.
I think we should do a show on, two things real quick. I know you got to go to Barry, and that is Alice talking about the changes in FHA. I think that will be the cash out type 1, type 2. I think we really need to understand that better. And also, Joe made a comment near the end of the year, one of the last live broadcasts, about, if you just delivered into your security, you wouldn't have the hedging volatility. That is, it's a simple statement, but it has magnitudes of impact, a lot of which people are facing today. So that,
right,
I think that's another topic to we can all contribute to, and Joe can lead if he wants, but that's a really important point.
You bet. Folks, we're going to take a brief break with a word from Black Knight, and then we're going to be back with our Hot Topic guest, Barry Habib.
As housing prices climb, U.S. homeowners are holding more capital equity than ever before. Effectively capturing the equity market could pose a unique challenge for lenders who may be limited by the capabilities of their current loan origination system or consumer lending platform. Lenders looking to streamline their home equity business processes can benefit from Black Knight's LoanSphere Empower loan origination system. Using this robust and intelligent technology, Empower can originate both first mortgages and home equity loans on the same system. This single configurable solution will help lenders improve margins, support regulatory requirements, and enhance customer satisfaction. To learn more about Empower, visit blackknightinc.com today.
Appreciate all of our sponsors, and thank you, Black Knight, for being a part of the group. Appreciate it. If you want to learn how to learn more about sponsoring our podcast, we'd welcome a conversation. Get a hold of Paul. Go to our website, and we'll look forward to talking with you. I am excited about our guest this week. Barry Habib has been certainly in the industry and high profile to many. He is an American entrepreneur and a frequent media resource for his mortgage and housing expertise. So a lot of media reaches out to him, as CNBC and Fox. I was talking to Barry when we recorded the interview today, and it was someone was on CNBC giving a report about some interest rates, and Barry's website was up in the background. It was hilarious. You know, he is the CEO of MBS Highway, a company and a platform created to help mortgage professionals and real estate agents articulate the opportunity in the housing market for their clients, along with better understanding what's going on with interest rates, the whole interest rate environment. Barry was just named the top real estate forecaster by Zillow and has been presented the Crystal Ball Award for the most accurate real estate forecast out of top 150 top economists in the nation. You'll hear a little bit about that. By the way, I just recorded an interview of Barry for the Lickin on Leadership podcast. That'll be coming up here. We'll be posting that one shortly, and you'll get more insights in his background. You know, he's been a number of successful businesses that he's grown and sold. The Mortgage Market Guide, you may remember that. Healthcare Imaging Solutions. During his sales career in mortgages, he was recognized as having one of the highest annual origination production volumes in the U.S. on two occasions. He personally originated over $2 billion in mortgage loans over his career. He is also a leading producer and managing partner of Rock of Ages. That's a Broadway musical theater production. I went to it. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And that became a film starring Tom Cruise. And Barry also played a part in that as a producer of the movie. For the past 20 years, Barry is well known as a professional speaker on real estate finance and real estate markets. And my favorite title I give him is he's a good friend of mine, and I am honored to have him as a friend. And he's probably one of the most giving people I have had the privilege of working with. Very, very giving guy. And he's going to give us some great information. So without further ado, let's get into the interview. So, Barry, let's get into your forecast for 2019. What do you see for 2019?
Well, hey, David, thanks for having me. Spend some time with you here. So 2019 is going to be a year where we see a lot of increased volatility. You've already seen it at the end of 2018. This is going to be a year where the interest rate environment is going to have to deal with some changes as to what's going on. And we've already, as I said, seen in the fourth quarter. You've got a drainage of liquidity. The Fed, who was making very significant reinvestment purchases a year ago of about $50 billion a month between treasuries and mortgage bonds, you know, that's come to an end now. And that's come to an end in its entirety in October. And it's no wonder that since October we've seen volatility in both stocks and interest rates increase rather dramatically. But on top of that, you've also got the European Central Bank, who has stopped what they call their asset purchase program, and that's the outright buys. So now that that's ended, and remember, those people were making purchases in the range of 85 billion euros a month. That kind of makes us look like amateurs. That's $100 billion. That coming to an end means that there's going to be a bit of a drainage of global liquidity. At the same time, the U.S. is more in debt, and the U.S. is looking at issuing more paper because it's got to make up the shortfall. You put this all together, David, and what it says is you've got more debt being issued at a time where less is being purchased, and it's usually a recipe to see interest rates move up a bit. Not dramatically, but you will see that. Now, early in the year and late in 2018, you saw interest rates decline, and that was really a good thing. But make no mistake, that's predominantly due to the stock market taking a very, very big turn lower. That money needs to be parked somewhere. So that money being parked in bonds gives us a real nice reprieve, gives us the benefit of that. However, should the stock market right itself, and should the stock market then go on a rally, we'll see a lot of that wonderful gain that we have seen be evaporated in the months to come.
So let's get into some of the driving factors. And you're saying Fed policy and you know, their counterparts overseas are going to be a big part of this because they're not buying bonds anymore, specifically mortgage backs. But there's also chatter between the White House and Chairman Powell. It's been very clearly signaled that to the point literally where President Trump was considering firing Chairman Powell. What are your thoughts and takes on that aspect?
Yeah, so let's pull no punches here as far as the Fed. So we're not talking about Fed rate hikes, okay? And the Fed may hike one or two times in 2019. I don't think it'll be much more than that, although I do think a lot will depend on inflation. Now, inflation's been held down because oil prices have dropped like a rock. Yeah. Okay, you go from the mid-70s to the mid-40s for a barrel of West Texas Intermediate. That does a lot to give you an inflation benefit. But that's just a bonus. Again, if that reverses itself, we'll have inflation fears to consider. As far as Chairman Powell goes, I think he's doing the right thing. I think he's doing a good job, and I think it's the first time since Volcker that we've seen somebody have a little spine and backbone. Look, let's again, I'm going to just call it out here, okay? I don't want to be political. I just want to be factual, okay?
Yep.
Janet Yellen was not a good Fed chair, just plain and simple. Had opportunities to protect our country by giving us higher interest rates from the Fed on short term when the economy could have afforded to do so. She delayed it, and many people, I'm just going to repeat what the general consensus amongst those people in the know. I'm not expressing my own opinion here, and I don't want to get anybody upset who's listening, but the general consensus is she did it for political reasons. She did it, right, A, to protect Obama, and she did it, B, to try and ensure an environment that would be beneficial for Hillary Clinton. That's what people are saying who are typically in the know, okay? And there's a lot of publications out there that have this, so just don't go by me. So if that – and I don't – now, my opinion is I don't think she was a good Fed chair, period. What her motivation was, I can't tell you. When you go back to Ben Bernanke, I don't think he was a good Fed chair. And Alan Greenspan, for much of his time, did a good job, but – we've gone in these boom-bust cycles where the Fed has held rates down too long. And we are in a situation that I think Chairman Powell, what he's trying to do is do the good thing that Paul Volcker did.
Do the right thing.
Do the right thing. And I don't think that it's a good idea that Donald Trump publicly disagrees with him in such a vehement way. Because, you know, by the way, he denies the fact, denies the claim that he would have fired him. He claims that that is not true. So who knows, okay? But what I can tell you is this, David, is that with regards to Trump, if he were to say something like, well, I would prefer if the Fed would keep rates low, I think there's an argument for the Fed to keep rates low, that's one thing. But to be as vocal as he is, think about it now if you are the Fed. If you are the Fed and you indeed don't continue with your planned rate
exactly
hikes, it appears that you're kowtowing and now you're a puppet of the administration. So it almost emboldens you to do something that maybe you would not have done on your own just to not appear that you – so I think that what Trump's done is put us in a bad situation here.
Yeah, and that's really an astute observation. I really want our listeners to zero in on that. You know, sometimes we get unintended consequences for things we say, whether you're running many of your business, talking to the department heads, or in this case, Trump talking to – Powell indirectly, and I think irresponsibly is what the words I would use. There's been a clear line there, and so we'll see what happens with that. But
Dave, by the way, it's not bashing Trump here. I think on this one issue, there's a lot of things that I agree with the way he's done, and a lot of negotiations have yielded very. I mean, North Korea was a prime example, and there have been many other things that he's done a very good job with. Right?
Yep.
I don't agree with his handling of this particular issue, because I think that it could have been handled with a bit more finesse and you could get the achieved and desired results. I think he almost is hurting his case as opposed to helping his case. But who knows? His track record has been he's gotten what he's wanted to do. So who knows? Who am I to say?
Yeah, he's a brilliant negotiator when it comes to many aspects of things. This one is, I drew a question mark. I thought it was not wise. Maybe irresponsible is too strong a word that I use. But anyway, I think that's a really good astute option. So your thought is that we're going to see the Feds then basically not be doing a lot of moving, or if they are, there is some upward pressure by the Feds. He's almost forced to based on that commentary, right?
I think that the Fed may have potentially taken their foot off the pedal a little bit on their own, because I think the Fed is concerned as well. See, here's what the Fed wants to do. The Fed wants to get us to a level where they can help the economy get stimulated when it needs to be. And I think that this is an important discussion for all of us here, is that why are they doing this? Because we are now entering, 2 months from now, the largest expansion, meaning a period without a recession that we've ever seen in the United States. They typically don't go this long. You know, there's a lot of reasons maybe that this has continued, whatever, but it's not a matter of if you're going to have a recession. The question is simply when, because you always have recessions. It's a cyclical economy. And when you do have that recession, what can the Fed do to get us out of the recession? If they have, to use maybe a bad analogy, no ammunition, so to speak, like, you know, Fed cuts, that they can do to stimulate the economy to a significant degree, well, then they have to resort to things like QE, quantitative easing. And the Fed just kind of got out of doing that, and they're trying to reduce their balance sheet. So they would loathe, again, starting another round of QE. It would really be a black eye for the Fed in general if they were to do that. So I think what Chairman Powell's trying to say and trying to do is say, look, let's get to at least a level of 3% at the Fed funds rate. So if you had to make cuts and get us down to 1% or 0.5% or even zero, for goodness sakes, like we were, we could do that, stimulate the economy, and not have to get into another round of QE and get us into an even deeper hole with the balance sheet that we're trying to do. You know, they're trying to reduce the balance sheet slowly right now. That's what they're hoping to accomplish. They don't want to try and go that direction if they don't have to once again. So that's why this is so important. And now to the bigger question, because we bring up recession, as you know, David, since, you know, 2017, my target was recession in 2020. There's a lot of reasons for that. So first of all, why are the reasons? And then what does it mean to somebody listening to this? Yeah. So the reasons are, every time in our country that we have hit an unemployment rate below 4.7%, the recession that would follow is about a three-year waiting period. So we did hit that in 2017, which would make 2020 a likely period for recession. But there are many other reasons for the recession. The stimulus within the economy is wearing off in 2019. You have this tightening of liquidity, as I mentioned, around the globe. That's another reason we could see recession. You also have the unemployment rate currently at 3.7%. We have never been this low in our history in peacetime. In peacetime, meaning when there's been wars out there, you know, go back to the Korean War, the Vietnam War, the Gulf Wars, you've seen the unemployment rate decrease beneath these levels, but that's when you have a lot of our good men and women not available for normal employment because they're in the armed forces. So what in peacetime, this is the lowest unemployment rate we've seen. So why do I bring up low unemployment rate? Somebody listening to this said, Barry, low unemployment's good, isn't it? Yeah, it is good, except that it is the number one predictor with the most accuracy of a recession. Recessions occur not when unemployment is high, but when unemployment reaches its trough, when it reaches its lowest level, and starts to tick higher. When unemployment starts to tick up 6 months to a year later, you typically see recession.
That is a point you made when we were together here last month in Philadelphia with Anthony Casa and the group at AIM. You made that point, and I don't know why. I'm sure I've heard that before, but I had missed that one detail. And so if we're heading into recession, recessions are good for mortgage rates.
That was
That's the whole point that I
had made there. But what I'd also shown was several charts that bear that out. You know, the last 15 recessions, everyone was 100% accurately forecast by the trough in unemployment. And if you see somebody listening to this scratching their head, I mean, just start to think about this, okay? So when the unemployment rate, it's kind of like if you have a cold, okay? The sniffles that you get are a symptom, it's not the cause. So when you start to see the unemployment rate, it's just telling you that the economy isn't as healthy as it was. So you're seeing when things slow down, you start to see people get laid off, right? I mean, that's the first thing. Your biggest expense is
that's
payroll. So as more and more people get laid off, they're not out there doing as much shopping as they were because you're not going to be buying with the highest level of – if you don't have a job, you're not going out buying new cars and new homes and new boats and new TVs, right? I mean, it only stands to reason. And those people that are now not in the area of making consumption, buying products, causes those sellers of those products to feel an even greater slowdown, which causes them to have to cut costs and lay off even more people. And the cycle then, this is why you have a cyclical economy. So a very good trigger of reaching its turning point is watching that unemployment rate start to hit its bottom level and start to tick up. That's why it is so accurate. Another one is the yield curve inversion, meaning the 10-year and the 2-year have an opposite relationship. Instead of the 10-year being a higher rate than the 2-year treasury, the 2-year treasury is actually a higher rate. And if you take a look at where they were just a few years back, the 10-year was 3% higher than the 2-year treasury in yield. Today, it's like 20 basis points difference. Okay, so 0.2% instead of 3.0%. The rate of the decline, the rate of these two kind of meeting each other, leads us to believe that we probably will see an inversion in 2019, which is also a good predictor that a year later or so you'll see a recession.
So we think that
there's a recession. So look, now that we've established that there's good reason to feel that 2020 or some time period thereabout brings on a recession, what does that mean? If you look at history, and again, I showed this chart to everybody there. We have these all available with an MBS highway. You can see with a 100% correlation, every recession means that what happens? Interest rates decline. There's less demand. The Fed becomes accommodative. Interest rate inflation because of the lack of buying. Now, you know, what's inflation? Too many dollars chasing too few products. When things slow down, what happens? Shelves get stocked. You have more products. People have less money. How do you push it? You put stuff on sale. So the cost of borrowing goes down. Inflation goes down. This tells us that in the next couple of years, we will more than likely see interest rates decline. So is this a refinance opportunity? Of course. But it's also, if you're listening to this and then you're in the mortgage business, what you really need to do is think of your own personal business as you're the CEO of that business. So how do I strategize this? You know, so many people make a mistake of looking at mortgages one at a time. Should never do that. You should always look at mortgages at least, at minimum, two at a time. Because people have life cycles. People's, just like the economy has credit cycles and ups and downs, as individuals, we have life needs that change and situations that change and opportunities that present itself much more rapidly than we think. So if we know that there's a chance that I'm going to refinance this customer, let's just say 2 years from now, well, then I'm going to go monthly MI. I'm not going to go single premium MI. Why? Because in order to break even, I'd have to be there 5 or 6 years. I'm going to go 0 points instead of paying points.
Great point.
I'm going to take a look at including closing costs and taking a higher rate. So while my competition is trying to get the lowest rate for that consumer, I want to get a higher rate for that consumer because that's a much better strategy because when you take a look at refinancing them within 2 years, they will have never gotten back their investment that would have taken 5 or 6 years. So if I can include closing costs, don't do points. Don't do upfront MI. Keep the upfront costs down. Keep the monthly payment as a way to do that. I want to make the monthly payment higher but the upfront investment lower. Because I know that within 3 years or 2 years or maybe even a year, who knows, there's going to be an opportunity to have a refinance and put ourselves in a much better position anyway. So since I will be refinancing it, why should I spend money up front? And this is the discussion that starts to turn you into an advisor as opposed to a salesperson and starts to make the difference. I don't want to compete with somebody whether they've got 4 7/8 or 4 3/4 or 5%. I don't want to be in that battle. I want to be in battle of strategizing that customer for what's best for them in the future, what's going to save them real money, what's going to save them big dollars. Look, the best rate on the wrong strategy is always much more expensive than a fair rate on the right game plan for your financial future.
Well, and that's what you talk about in your MBS Highway publication. Every day, you're not just bringing out what's going on with rates, you're mixing in strategy. And I think this is why your site is a must-have for virtually every one of our listeners. And listeners, if you're not signed up for it, so let's just take a little moment here, Barry, share with our people how they can sign up. And then I want to get into your real estate trends because Zillow said you're the top real estate forecaster, and so we want to get your thoughts on where the housing market's going. But first, how could they sign up for MBS Highway?
It's easy. Just go to mbshighway.com, or you could contact me directly, Barry@MBSHighway. We will get you all squared up. And there are so many things that we do. Yes, of course, we'll tell you when to lock or float better than anybody else. I brought this concept into the industry. There's a lot of people who have come along and tried to do these type of things, and they have these services. But anybody who's used our service knows just because you could put a basketball in a basket does not mean you're LeBron James. Okay, this is an art form. I've been doing this. Yeah. I've been trained by the best financial minds. I have contacts with the best financial minds in the world who are my friends. We do a really, really, really good job of. There are disciplines that we use on our technical analysis that are better than anything that is far better than anything that people can take a look at otherwise. So that's one small aspect of what we do. We provide you tools to articulate what's going on in the real estate market. We've got a debt consolidation tool that's interactive with the customer they're doing $200,000 a day. They're doing a loan a day just by using this tool going to their database, and they're helping real estate agents overcome the biggest problem that they have, which is people that are move-up buyers going to not only a bigger home, bigger mortgage, but going to a much higher rate and looking at that payment shock. We're showing them how to overcome that obstacle and so, so much more. So, yes, that's how you would get it. Now, real estate trends, and yes, thank you for mentioning that. Zillow did give me the Crystal Ball Award for being out of the 150 top economists in the U.S., which, first of all, that's just an honor to be part of that group, the most accurate real estate forecaster. And a lot of that credit goes to the fact that I talk to realtors and mortgage professionals around the country in the tens of thousands every year, so I do get a good feel for different markets. But I think we do really good analytics, and what I could tell you is that I know that people have been calling for the death of the housing market, Diana Olick pounding the drum, but so many people, David, just in our industry that are out there talking about, oh, real estate's crashing, this, I hear it all the time. People who have normal shows in the industry, normal podcasts, and they just, I listen to it and I just cringe because it's very clear that they are not looking at the data correctly, or they're taking things in absolutes. They're not understanding the overall. So first of all, let's understand this. Real estate's local, and different markets are going to behave differently. But the real estate market in general has been very, very healthy. We're looking at a little over 5% per year appreciation, which, by the way, if you take a look at our 2018 forecast, both in rate and real estate values, we nailed it. Even the stock market taking a big hit at the end of the year. If you read our forecast from 2018, and I know everybody's looking forward to our 2019 forecast, but we nailed it on stocks, we nailed it on real estate, we nailed it on home appreciation, we nailed it on interest rates. We kind of said the range that rates would be in, and all those forecasts were incredibly accurate, almost shockingly accurate. So what we're looking at for real estate this year is slower appreciation than 2018, but you will see appreciation. Now, there are some markets that will struggle. Chicago's a little bit soft. Seattle's a little bit soft, but I think Seattle comes back because of Amazon, because of a lot of things that you've got going on there. I think that comes back in the spring. And they've had such robust appreciation. It just needs a breather. There are so many markets around the country that we feel will do extremely well. But as a whole, we're looking at about 4% appreciation year over year in 2019.
Which is healthy.
Creates enormous wealth, David. Enormous wealth creation. So but nobody does the math. Nobody does the numbers. 4% doesn't sound like it's very exciting until you compound that out based upon value of the home and the leverage that you have, because most people put 5 or 10% down. On a 10% down investment, 4% appreciation is 40% gain on your investment. So there are the real estate market is a very healthy market overall. There is less demand than there is supply. When you take a look at the demographics and the birth rates from years back, there are more people going to be entering the market. So we will see the real estate market remain healthy.
Yeah, the demographics with the millennials coming in are going to be so strong. The indicators are just so bullish for housing. Let's talk about price appreciation. We have talked about the 4%. I like that. But with them coming in, are we at risk of having double digit again? And then also talk about the income growth versus the inflationary challenges we've had in housing.
Okay, so appreciation and affordability. Let's talk about both. So 4% appreciation, some markets will be hotter. The Northeast is probably going to remain pretty hot right now because it lagged. It definitely lagged. If you look the last 10 years, much of the Northeast was flat. But now is like the time where the Northeast is seeing some really good gains and probably will be closer to 6% to 7% in many areas of the Northeast. So pretty robust appreciation in the Northeast. When you take a look at overall, though, that 4%, I don't think we're going to see a danger of it overheating. The reasons why is one of them is affordability is keeping a little bit of a lid on it. But that said, affordability is not terrible. The media does not understand the concept of affordability, and here's why. Because the media says, well, if real estate values go up 4%, then incomes need to go up at 4% to keep up with it, right? That is not a true statement for a few different reasons. So reason number one is, here's the thing. Look, 4%, first of all, if the incomes need to go up 4%, there's a lot of people who aren't yet homeowners. If, and I've done the work on this, if you take the bottom 25% quadrant of earners, and now who are these people? A lot of them are 17-year-old kids, 20-year-old kid. They're getting a good job, but it's part-time. They're not seeing big year-over-year increases. This is somebody who's paying their way through college or just getting started. They are not people that are in the market yet to buy a home. They will be. But today, they're not really true people buying a home. So it's kind of like if you have a basketball team and you've got 12 people on your basketball team and the team scores 120 points. So you could say, okay, it's 10 points per player, right? Well, not really, because if you had, let's just say, three of those players sit on the bench the entire time, so they really weren't in the game. Of those people who played, it was 15 points per player. Okay, so we have to just kind of, or those eight players who played, there's 15 points per player. So what we really need to think about is that if you take that bottom quadrant out of people who are not in the game, the year-over-year earnings are 4.7%, actually greater than the rate of appreciation. In addition to that, what's really important is that you don't have to keep in lockstep with appreciation because of the relative nature of your monthly payment to the monthly income. Here's what I mean. If your monthly payment were $1,000 a month for principal and interest, okay, $1,000 a month, chances are your income is probably $5,000 a month. That's what. That's not my numbers. That's the numbers according to either Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. So P&I payment of $1,000, $5,000 is your number for monthly income on average. So what if that went up 4% or even 5% on the payment? Because you didn't buy a home last year, now it went up 5%. If interest rates were about the same, let's assume for a minute that they were, and now you go ahead and you buy a new home, but it's 5% higher, your payment's going to go up 5%. So instead of $1,000 a month, it's $1,050. So how much does your income have to go up to match that? $50 a month. How much is $50 a month on a $5,000 a month income? It's 1% gain. So I know I'm oversimplifying this, and there's other things to consider. Great. But all I want to do is just show conceptually you don't have to go in lockstep. So theoretically, to keep up with a 5% rise in appreciation, you only need 1, 2, or in the worst case, 3% rise in incomes, and we're getting far more than that if we take a look at people that are in the game. Even overall is 3.1% on weekly earnings. And by the way, David, everybody looks at hourly earnings. Don't look at hourly earnings. And the reason why you don't look at hourly earnings is because people could make more per hour but work less hours. What you want is how much was my net paycheck each week. That's why you look at weekly earnings. All the amateurs look at hourly earnings. Look at weekly earnings.
Great point. What are some of the black swans out there that you think might show up in or have the potential showing up in 2019, both from an interest rate scenario and from a housing market? Are there any?
Global and geopolitical risks are out there, certainly, for sure. If the Fed overplays its hand, if the situation with China escalates to something that is undesirable, if we're in a position where we see the stock market take a much more pronounced decline than it is, here's what starts to happen. What starts to happen is that as people get their statements, and it used to be, you used to get your statement quarterly, then you would get a statement monthly. Today, you could just look at your phone and see how your portfolio is performing. When
yep.
people's portfolio, which Wonderful. Most of us, by the way, here is the level of assets that we have. The level of assets that we have is its highest level ever in our history, meaning this. For every dollar of disposable income that we have $7 that is in assets, meaning like stocks and housing and things like that. So if those assets were to change, we are subject to seeing a big decrease in our net worth. And when customers, when potential home buyers see their statements come in or see their valuations come in their portfolios, drop, they are less willing to go and make a big capital purchase like a home. That's kind of what you saw recently. The big stock market decline has caused some pause in people buying homes and buying cars. People in the car industry, people out there are saying it seems like it's a little slower. The buyers just aren't there. That's partially because they're psyche. People say, oh, well, rates went up, affordability. Baloney. Come on. They're not thinking. They're just trying to find an answer. Rates actually are not bad right now. They've kind of come down from where they were. Rates are actually pretty good right now. So that's not the issue. When you take a look at affordability, I mean, really, what's changed in the last month? Affordability has changed that much? It hasn't changed. So why has it changed? What's the big variable? The big drop in stock prices. A 20% drop in stock prices means that for many people, the value of their portfolio is down 20%. Their net worth is down significantly. And they are less confident in going out and buying a home. When the stock market corrects itself and starts to resume an upward trend, you will see that confidence return. But by the same token, you're asking for a black swan, a deeply pronounced stock market decline could be trouble for people buying real estate too.
Yeah, it's really good, some great points. Again, a lot of this you have on your website and as subscribers. Talk about the cost of this. This is actually the most affordable service out there for the value that you're getting. Talk about that.
Well, I'm just watching CNBC as we're talking, and they have my buddy Craig Strength on there. And if you looked at the clip on CNBC, what does he have? He's got his MBS highway up right behind him as he's talking. So that's pretty fun. As I'm talking
that's
to you,
good.
I swear to God, I'm looking at the TV and I'm seeing it. So, yeah, so listen, you need to have our service.
Yeah.
You're in a big money business. Your commissions are large. There's just too much to lose. You have too much at risk. I mean, think, what does it cost you to lose a transaction to somebody else? And I will tell you this, if your competitor has MBS Highway and you don't, it's going to be hard to win that battle. It truly is. They just have too much ammunition that they could give both the realtor and both that customer. So what would it cost you to lose a real estate relationship? And what would it cost you to lose a customer? I mean, just think about how much would a realtor relationship cost you to lose if they sent you three or four transactions?
Oh,
how much food on the table is that for your family? If you lost one transaction, how much is that? And that we're not even talking about gaining transactions, because you will slaughter it and you will get so many more transactions. But listen, you can't be so unwilling to make an investment. Because if you were thinking about this as a consumer, would you want to send somebody to a mortgage professional who didn't invest in their self, who didn't want the best tools, who didn't want to be able to give the – I wouldn't want to send somebody to that person. I wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah.
Would I want to go to a doctor or send a family member to a physician who didn't invest themselves, who was too scarce to
yep. –
to put any money into what they're doing to provide a better experience to a customer? Look, this is about experience. Do you want to give your realtor and your customer the best experience possible, or do you want to potentially be at risk of losing it to somebody else who can?
And I think that's about leadership, Barry. You're a clear leader in the industry. I'm honored to get to know you and have you call you a dear friend. And one of the things we have and we share in common is a passion for this industry, and that is to be informed. A lot of strategies are on your website, and a lot of this conversation's there. And some people have said, I'm not interested in being an economist. I just want to get which way are interest rates, should I lock, should I not lock? And you do provide that. You provide that in a daily video, a daily call. My phone lights up 2-3 times a day sometimes with you saying, hey, got a call for you, just update. I just love this service because it helps keep people informed of what's going on. So listeners, if you're not signed up, be sure to go to mbshighway.com and get signed up. It's the best investment by investing in yourself, investing in becoming knowledgeable. Again, you don't have to become an economist. Barry, I want to say thank you so much for joining us here today. Is there anything that we haven't covered that you want to make sure our listeners understand about 2019 that you think is really important?
Yeah, I want the listener to understand that this is a different marketplace. You are unfortunately under attack. Fintech companies are coming in trying to take your business away from you, and technology is making it easier to do that. The world is changing at a really, really rapid pace, and what we need to do is we need to stay ahead of that. We can't just kind of follow along. We have to understand things are changing. I mean, look at all of your electronics. Look at all of the tools you use.
Mm-hmm.
3 years ago, you thought you were cutting edge, right? You thought you were the coolest cat out there with the stuff you have today. You throw it out. It's junk, okay? Think about how fast everything is changing. And I promise you, in the next year or two, things are going to continue to change. Your one differentiator from the fintech companies is that you can provide advice. That's the thing that they can't do. And advice on, hey, you know, can I qualify at this level? That they can replicate. Do the work that's unscalable. And that's what we try and help you with every day at MBS Highway. And that's what people need to do on their own, is to try and find out how they can become insulated from being replicated from technology.
Excellent advice. Great. Check it out, folks. MBSHighway.com. Barry, what a joy to have you here today. Thank you for your insights.
You're a rock star, my man. You help so many people, and you've got the biggest heart out there. So I love you, and I appreciate you.
That's kind. Coming from you especially, you have a heart to give, and that's what it's about. You'll find out the givers, and that's a great book, Givers and Takers. We'll be talking about that in another episode. But, Barry, thanks so much for giving a lot of insights here for us today.
You're awesome, brother. Thank you.
Appreciate you. That was a good interview. I made some more notes, and I recorded it. So I went back and took some notes on that. Be sure to share that out on social media. It's Paul, our producer, was sharing some points on LinkedIn as we were doing that. So be sure to share that out. We're also going to be you can share, of course, the whole podcast. Always love you to do that. But you can also probably by tomorrow you'll be able to get just that download of just Barry's comments. So if you say, I don't want to listen to the first part, I've already listened to it, I do want to go back and listen to Barry again. You can do so by going to our website, Lickiton Lending, and there will be a link to just Barry's interview. So good to have you with us. Appreciate you. Next week, we've got Seth Sprague coming back from Phoenix Capital. We're going to be talking about main strategies to maintain profitability in 2019. It's going to be a great one. We had him on December 17th. We didn't get it all covered, so we're bringing him back by popular demand. So good to have you with us as listeners. Thank you so much to our sponsors, Black Knight, MBA, Mortgage Collaborative, the Lenders One organization, Velma, Knowledge Coop, Vidyard, and again, our regular sponsors. So thank you so much. Open Mortgage. Did I mention them? Great job. Check out their website, openmortgage.com. Thanks so much, everybody. Have a great rest of the week, and see you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.